This is Main Street on Pray Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and today we're going to have kind of an immigration theme to the program, if you will. Over 100 years ago, the Germans from Russia started to arrive in the Dakotas and Montana and Saskatchewan, and we'll hear a little bit about their heritage, and specifically their musical heritage. We'll also hear about new Americans and the stories they tell about how they got here and what their hopes are in their new country. And of course, we'll have our regular piece from Merrill Pepcorn, a Dakota Date book, and we'll have a little preview of the University of North Dakota's Writers' Conference, which is underway right now. I'll be up there tomorrow. We'll be hearing more about it Wednesday and Thursday, but we'll have a little preview today of, let's call him the headliner, Tony Kushner. Okay. But we're going to start with something that actually began several years ago when Prairie Public and the Germans from Russia Heritage Collection at NDSU started doing an oral history with all of those immigrants from around the state. They interviewed many, many people, and among the things they talked to them about were music. What kind of music was in their lives? What kind of music did their families play for each other? What kind of music was at church? What kind of music did they use for celebrations? And so you're going to hear those voices. This was produced by Bill Thomas. He is Prairie Public's news director, of course, but he certainly knows how to move audio around as well. And so he put this together. It's available on a CD, and we'll talk more about that. But let's hear a little excerpt, and you're going to hear State Senator Robert Eberle talk about the Germans from Russia. He's from that family himself. He was raised in a homestead outside of Lair, North Dakota. So without further ado, let's hear about music traditions from the Germans from Russia.
Stehen Fenster Mitternacht, so einsam auf der stillen Wacht, dann denk ich an mein fernes Leben, ob mir's auch treu und
I love the music of my own German-Russian tradition. Every group that has lived up here in the Northern Plains has their music, from the Native Americans to the newest immigrants. When the Germans from Russia started coming here in the late 19th century, we brought our music too. I have the privilege of living on the place my grandfather homesteaded in 1889 when he came from Tiplitz, Bessarabia. Today we have some memories for you, from interviews that the Dakota Memories Oral History Project did with German Russians born around here in the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s. They talk about traditional music and new music they picked up. As they say, we always had to sing.
Und weinen mich ans Herz gedreht. Sie liebt mich noch, sie ist mir.
We always sang. When we were doing dishes, we would sing. Or if we'd be driving to town to go to church, we'd sing. We'd sing on the way home from church. I mean, it was just a part of the family.
My mother sang with us all the time. None of us played any instruments, but we did sing.
German song, English song.
The Gut ist die Liebe, that's known by everybody. I mean, all the Germans knew that.
Gut ist die Liebe, er liebt auch mich.
Three or four of them guys that played accordion, and some played fiddles, but it was a musical family.
The church is often an important center for music. That is certainly true for German Russians. Reinald Klein, born in Wishing, North Dakota in 1924, talks about how his pastor alternated German services with English. After that, Mildred Glott-Wald, who was born in Hague, North Dakota, talks about learning music as part of the church choir.
Singing was a very important part, and the singing would be hymns. Largely hymns, yeah. The German one, Gott ist die Liebe, und großer Gott, wir lieben dich. God is love, great God, we praise you, was the second one. There were a whole lot of others, but this language thing, I remember the change came in the church when I was a teenager, and we had a pastor who was very wise. He'd three Sundays be German, one Sunday be English, and then increasing. But we had a hymnal which had the words for English and the words for German. And the parents sang German and we sang English. I can get the book and sing them for you.
Love divine, all loves excelling, joy of heaven to earth come down. Fix in us thy humble dwelling, all thy faithful mercies crown. Jesus, thou art all compassion.
Sitting on the cafe steps with my loud voice, I think he kind of picked me out. And one day he came over, "How would you like to sing in the church choir?" Sing in the church choir? That put me up another notch. That was like moving to town almost, because I always liked music, you know, never had any opportunity to play. I would see a school, whatever, function where there was a band. The sliding trombone always fascinated me. But by the time I got to high school, there was no more band. They didn't have a band at the time, so I never got to play a musical instrument. But he took me upstairs to their living quarters, and he showed me, everything was in Latin at that time, showed me the notes, the black ones, you don't hold quite as long, and when they're up a little on the line, you have to go up higher, and if they're white, those you have to hold longer, and that's how I still sing. The black ones are shorter than the longer ones, and the ones that have a little tail are even shorter, and that's all I know about music, but I've been singing in church choir ever since.
Viola Esslinger Conrad, who was born in Fredonia, talks about one song that has stayed in her memory. And no wonder, considering that her mother and father sang it every night. The song is Gott ist die Liebe. Gott ist die Liebe has stood the test of time, and there are even some young people in German-Russian country today that can sing at least a verse of it. Gott ist die Liebe is to German Russians what amazing grace is to our English friends.
The Gott ist die Liebe, that's known by everybody. I mean, all the Germans knew that. And I know when we get together for our family reunion, which we have done, I mean, my dad's family reunion goes back, or even mother's, Gott ist die Liebe. And they sing, Gott ist die Liebe, lässt mich erlösen, Gott ist die Liebe, liebt auch mich. That's the verse. Drum sag ich noch einmal, Gott ist die Liebe, Gott ist die Liebe, liebt auch mich. Ich lag in Banden, der Schnitten senden, ich lag in Banden und kam nicht los. Drum sag ich noch einmal, Gott ist die Liebe, Gott ist die Liebe, liebt auch mich. And it goes on, it's got 8 verses, but I don't remember them all. But it says, God is love, and he loves also me. I mean, it keeps, and then the other one said, I was lost in sin, but Jesus took me in. And then again it says, God is love, and so on. God is love, and that's what this little song is all about. And when Dad sang it every evening, you know, and Mother, we knew where they stood, not thinking about it at all as far as spiritualness is concerned and so on. So that was, I think, a good bringing up.
Here's another song, this time about true love. Julius and Rose Both Flug Miller of Dickinson, North Dakota, have enjoyed performing German songs for people over the years, and this is the one that got them started.
We're going to sing Treue Liebe, which means true love. It's the first song we ever did in public, and since then we've been singing the German songs. It's a war song. Evidently, Germany had many wars. Germany and France fought a lot, I understand. And it's a soldier who is standing guard, and he's missing his sweetheart.
Steh im Fenster Mitternacht, so einsam auf der stillen Wacht. Dann denk ich an mein fernes Leben, ob mir's auch treu und hold verblieb.
dann denk ich an mein fernes Leben, ob mir's auch treu und hold verblieb. Als ich zu vorne fortgehm ist, hat sie so herzlich mich gekisst.
Again, this is titled We Always Had to Sing, German-Russian Music in the Old Days, and we'll have more in a moment.
Tonight's television lineup on Prairie Public starts with a Time Team special edition featuring explorations by British archaeologists. Then at 9 Central, Frontline looks at the crisis at Japan's Fukushima nuclear power plant. Tune in tonight on Prairie Public.
Support for this program is provided by the North Dakota Education Association, an organization of 8,000 school employees working to ensure great public schools for every child.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and in the background, the JMB Band, they're jamming in North Dakota, and they're jamming a little German stuff, a little polka, a little waltz, a little schottische. All right, sort of appropriate to our theme. We're talking about a new CD that's about to be released. We Always Had to Sing, German-Russian Music in the Old Days. It was produced by Prairie Public's Director of Radio, Bill Thomas, and it's narrated by North Dakota State Senator Robert Erberle.
Und schickst dein nach dem Bild zum Herrn, auch für den Liebsten in der Fern. Und schickst dein nach dem Bild zum Herrn, auch für den Liebsten in der Fern.
That was Julius and Rose Miller singing Treue Liebe, or True Love. Speaking of true love, weddings are a wonderful place for music. Arthur Schmidt is another one who likes to sing the German songs for people, and when they got married, that gave him a chance to perform.
Well, this is a couple of songs for mostly for weddings. And one of them is Ich hab ein Rausch vom roten Wein und das fühlt dich so gut. Aber dann kamen mir die Gedanken ein, das Mädchen muss ich noch sehen. And the other one is, Schön ist die Jugend, bloß sie kommt nicht mehr, sie kommt nicht mehr, oh nein, sie kommt nicht mehr. Schön ist die Jugend, bloß sie kommt nicht mehr. And then we have sort of a funny song. It's Ach, du lieber Augustin, 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 ach, du lieber Augustin, alles dies hin. Das Weib ist versoffen, das Geld ist verlaufen, und ach, du lieber Augustin, alles ist hin. And then there's one. Du liegst mir im Herzen, du liegst mir im Sinn. Du machst mir viel Schmerzen, weiß nicht, wie gut ich dir bin. Ja, weiß nicht, wie gut ich dir bin.
That was Arthur Schmidt, who was born in 1922 in Newdorf Township near Gackle, North Dakota. Singing is a big thing for German Russians. We don't want to forget about instruments, but we'll get to those in a bit. The German-Russian love of singing maybe has something to do with all the wonderful singers and choirs we have in this part of the world. We will hear next from Mary Vedder Shell Smith. She was perhaps a little shy to perform as a young girl, but she didn't like it when she missed her chance at a wedding. She was born in Linton, North Dakota, in 1913.
I can tell you about our singing. My sister Nina and I sang. Dad was so proud of his two girls, his little two girls. Every place they went, we got to go along. We always got to go along, because we had to sing. And, oh, my gosh, I didn't want to sing, but we always had to sing. So this one particular day we went to a wedding. It was, I think it was at Socrates or something. I went and I hit myself. I didn't want to sing. I didn't want to go. Well, Rosina sang, and she got a quarter. And I felt so bad. Now, why didn't I sing? I would have got a quarter. But, oh, my gosh, we went up north. I think it's Karlsruhe. It's up by Minot. I had an uncle up there. And they had a big wedding up there. And we got to go along because my dad made us sing. And we didn't sing bad at all. I think I sang a high and she sang alto. I don't know. It wasn't bad. I guess it wasn't. I don't know. But he always would make us sing so why we always got to go along, because he'd make us sing.
George Berger is next from Dickinson. He talks about singing on Names Day. Names Day was a special day for the saint after whom you were named.
Oh, on the Names Day, quite a bit of singing. German songs, English songs, songs we learned in school. So usually there'd be one or two kids in the group that could play guitar. I used to do fairly well in playing guitar, but I never did learn to play reading the notes. I would have learned that had I had a teacher, because I partially learned it without one. Our oldest brother, Leo, knew how to play violin. Violins were very popular in the late 20s and all the way through the 30s.
Music and singing were not always part of a public occasion, of course. Wilma Beck Haupt from Eureka, South Dakota, tells us how her parents sang them a prayer song every night. Leona Kuhn Hoff's parents had weekly Bible stories for the children that ended with singing. But as we'll hear, some of the songs were in English. And Louis Helfrich, who was born in Glen Olin, North Dakota, talks about how his family sang everywhere.
When we were a little older, then our parents didn't sleep upstairs anymore with us. They slept downstairs. But my brothers and I, we slept in one room. And when we were ready to go to sleep, and then we were already in bed, and then we would always sing this little song that was a German prayer song. Müde bin ich, geh zur Ruhe, schließe meine Augen zu. It's got three verses in there, and I still know them all. We always sang that together, and I still like that. It went like this. Müde bin ich, geh zur Ruhe, schließe meine Augen zu. Vater, lass die Augen dein, über meinem Bette sein. It means I'm tired, I want to go to sleep, and let's see. It says, close my eyes and watch over me. That's what it says.
Every Sunday afternoon, we had to sit and listen to Bible stories for about an hour. And we sang this little song about poor babes in the woods. My dear, do you know how long time ago two poor little children whose names I don't know were stolen away on a fine summer's day and left in the woods, as I heard people say. And when it was night, so sad was their plight, the sun it went down and the moon gave no light. They sobbed and they sighed and they bitterly cried, till the poor little children lay down and they died. And when they were dead, the robin so red brought strawberry leaves and over them spread, and all the day long they sang them this song. Poor babes in the woods, poor babes in the woods. She loved to sing, my mother did. We sang like Down in the Valley and, you know, all of those old songs. Cowboy Jack. You know, we sang a lot, and my mother sang and my dad sang, but I never heard them sing together. But my mother sang with us all the time. None of us played any instruments, but we did sing.
My mother's family was very, very musical. My great-grandfather was a liturgical music instructor in Russia. And it just was handed down to all of the family after that. They all sang and played some instrument, or instruments, I should say. So, you know, at Christmas time, we always sang. When we were doing dishes, we would sing. Or if we'd be driving to town to go to church, we'd sing. We'd sing on the way home from church. I mean, it was just a part of the family. Christmas time, we sang Christmas songs. But other than that, we sang a lot of the old German songs. I can't sing them anymore, but at one time I could.
Leona Haupt mentioned that her family did not play any instruments. That was not the case in the family of Mona Wettstein-Leipe. Her father had all three children playing three instruments each and started up a community band in Cronow, Saskatchewan.
What he really liked was music. And he would, he taught himself to play many instruments, whatever he could sort of get a hold of. And he would teach himself music. He didn't know notes either, but he learned. I don't know how he actually learned that, but he did. And he could play a variety of things. And the one he liked best was a trumpet. And he, when we were, let's see, how old would I have been? Maybe about 8. He got a band going in the Cronow area. And he, first of all, taught my sister and I to play. The very few years that we were together. And he himself, and the three of us played through three different instruments. And so we played one time in church at some kind of a Missions Fest or some darn thing. Can't remember, but it was just at church. And a lot of people heard it, and then they thought they maybe liked their children to play too. Well, that was quite up his alley. And it was during the war years, and it was very difficult to find instruments. So he went to no ends to find used instruments for these parents to buy for their children. And we had a little band that would be, I would say, maybe even about 30 children from our community. And we played mostly hymns and simple marching kind of music. Was nothing fantastic, but it was really something for our community because, you know, we all learned to read music, and we all learned to play an instrument. And he did that for quite a few years until the children sort of grew and left home for college, you know. It got smaller and smaller. And then in the end, after we came back, we were gone for quite a few years, and we came back and had our children. He started it up again in his senior years, and we played with another group in Regina, again playing hymns and that kind of thing. So music was really something he loved to do.
We always had to sing German-Russian music in the old days. That's the name of this production from Prairie Public. And I'll tell you about the CD
A little later, we'll have another segment as well. But first, we got to check in with Todd McDonald, find out what's happening in the news.
And hey, good afternoon, Doug.
I hear guns are in the news again.
Guns again, coming up at the state capitol. Earlier this winter, we had discussion in the state house about a number of gun control measures or gun ownership regulations. It's not really gun control, but it's just kind of where we can have guns and how we can have guns, and discussion today in the state senate looking at guns in schools.
All right, go ahead.
All right, thank you. State School Superintendent Kirsten Basler says small rural schools don't want to be forced to decide whether to allow guns in their schools. The Senate Judiciary Committee is looking at a number of gun rights bills. One would allow some people to carry guns in schools if the school board gave permission. Basler says the rural school superintendents don't want the legislature to force them to deal with the issue of whether they should have guns in their schools.
They don't want to manage the job of who has guns in their schools. They don't want to have that responsibility. They went into education to educate children and help teachers become better teachers.
Valley City Representative Dwight Kiefert is the measure's sponsor. He says the bill would give schools a chance to protect themselves if a lunatic comes to the school with a gun.
Just having the right to protect themselves, I mean, if this law passes, will be a strong deterrent for a would-be attacker. So no longer will I have the peace of mind of walking into a gun-free zone.
That bill has already passed the House. The House has passed a bill to study how the Capitol and other state buildings are utilized and whether the state needs to build more office space. The study would include space off the Capitol grounds that the state rents for certain agencies, and it would look at whether the existing judicial wing can accommodate the needs of the state Supreme Court, which has asked for more space. Bismarck Representative George Kaiser says this needs to be a comprehensive study of space needs and how much space is rented.
The insurance department has buildings all over the city they're renting. Is that good or bad? Is it a good decision from a business perspective? I don't think any of us can answer that. This is an area that we really need to study.
The bill passed 66-28. It'll now be returned to the Senate, which will look at the changes made by the House. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and we've been listening to We Always Had to Sing, German-Russian music in the old days, produced by Prairie Public Director of Radio Bill Thomas and narrated by North Dakota State Senator Robert Erberle. Here is the conclusion.
As you probably well know, German-Russians don't just like German-Russian music, though that's mostly what we're covering here today. Here is Wilfred Jacob Bechler from Allen, Saskatchewan, who loved his family's $15 Lone Ranger guitar.
We had a hired man that played a mouth organ. We had never heard a mouth organ before. Oh, man, was that beautiful. Then we found out that a cousin of ours in town had a Hawaiian guitar. So we asked him whether we could take it out because our hired man knew how to play a guitar. So we took it out. Now, it was Hawaiian, but it didn't matter. You could still tune the strings to Spanish. You just turned them a little tighter or a little looser or whatever. And he showed us one chord. And then winter came and he went away. And then my oldest brother, not my oldest brother, one of my oldest brother, was called into the army. And he went into training for 1 month in Dundurn, which is about 20 miles southwest of here. Is a camp there. And he got $1.40 a day. And he wrote back to us and told us that we should go and borrow $15 from Grandma and order the Lone Ranger guitar in the Eaton catalog. And when he comes back, he'll pay Grandma back. So that's how we got our first guitar, Lone Ranger guitar. Well, we knew that one chord, and we pounded around and we listened to the radio. We had a famous entertainer up here called Wilf Carter. He was in the Grand Ole Opry for a while, too. But most Americans don't know about Wilf Carter. But we listened to him. He was always on the radio. And by listening and trying, we learned a few things like that. And in the fall, when I was hauling grain, I went and I took myself a board about as wide as a guitar neck is and marked the frets on, and I'd sit on there while I was hauling grain, going with my fingers, pretending there were strings on to get my fingers used to it. I was clumsy. Oh, my God, was I clumsy. But I wouldn't give up. And I finally learned to play the thing pretty good, yeah.
If there is one instrument that is associated with Germans from Russia, it is the accordion. I suppose we can blame Lawrence Welk for that, though the truth is the accordion is popular in a lot of places with a lot of people. We cannot deny that it has been popular with us here in the prairie, The last four stories we have all include an accordion. Let's start with Reuben Richard Wolfe, who was born in 1933 in Havelock, North Dakota. He got his first instrument by working hard on the harvest.
I learned to play accordion at home when I was about 13 years old. And I remember my dad said, it was during threshing time, and my dad said, if you work real hard, I'll buy you an accordion. And believe me, I worked real hard that year. I had blisters on my hands, and I don't mean maybe. That's how I started. I don't know anything about notes. I wish I did a lot of times, but I learned by ear, and that's what you hear is what you get. My mother played accordion. She played piano, and I had my the Uncle Edwin I was talking to you about, that he played accordion. And there's quite a few accordion players, and my grandfather, slot side, they had a band at one. They called it the slot band when they first came over to this country. And there was three or four of them guys that played accordion, and some played fiddles, but it was a musical family. So it, I guess that's maybe how I come by it. But I'm not as good as they were. This was just an old-time German waltz, or polka, I should say.
Ida Zimmerman Kaplan is from Lair, and I love the picture she gives us of her little brother with an accordion almost as big as he is.
My dad played the accordion, and my younger brother started playing when he was 5 years old. He could hardly see over the accordion, but he picked it up and played by ear. And my brother Israel took organ lessons, and they had one of these old-fashioned organs in the house. So he would sit and play the organ. I remember him playing When the Roll is Called Yonder. He played that song until we were all, like, as tired of it. When they got company, he would play. And they would sing some of these old hymns from that they had memorized, you know. So he would play along, and they'd sing these old German hymns.
Edward Matthew Selensky from Rugby, North Dakota, was in a family band. There used to be many of those, and some are still around. And they had two accordion players.
In our family, there are seven boys, and five of us... We played in, had a band going from mid-50s to almost up to 80, I suppose, or it probably was in the 80s. And we played an awful lot of wedding dances and parties and anniversaries those years. Of course, we had an old-time band. I played the clarinet and saxophone and the piano and the banjo. Then one brother played the accordion and just the accordion. Then my younger brother, Jim, he played the accordion and clarinet and saxophone with me. Then we had a drummer, we had a guitar player. But we slowed up some as we all got older, and jobs and stuff. It was pretty hard to play at night in the daytime, but never made any money, but we sure had a lot of fun sometimes. Seen a lot of good men bite the dust, get married.
Edwin Emil Diewold from Napoleon, North Dakota, went into the military in World War II. Because of his music, he ended up playing in a band instead of fighting as he'd expected. He played, as he says, all the way through, and even plays a song for us.
After I got out of high school and then went to college, I did play for house parties, so on and so forth. Then after I went into the military, and if you want to know the whole story, I got to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey, and that's where we were going to ship out to Austria. I was supposed to be a soldier fighting on skis over there. So anyway, I started playing piano as soon as I got on the ship. And either the commander or somebody heard me, and he wanted to know if I'd play all the way over to Austria. So I got to do that. I then was stationed at St. Johann, Austria, and we went to Italy one time, and then I bought that particular accordion, which was black at the time. And we came back to base, and we started a band, which I got a picture of, and we got to go to, like, Salzburg and Berchtesgaden and those places. I played accordion, and I had a guy from Texas playing the guitar, and a gentleman by the name of Dale Meyer from Wisconsin to sing, and he could yodel. Very, very beautiful. And so we went in different places for the military, really, because they had contests over there. And we got all the way to the end. And I learned the song, so I'll play that song. And then it's called Annalisa.
I hope you have enjoyed these memories of the old days, the Germans from Russia, and how they love music. There are so many more stories out there, and maybe you can record some of them with your relatives and friends. People love music, and as the Germans from Russia know, it is a wonderful way to bring people together.
Music was really something he loved to do.
We'd sing on the way home from church. I mean, it was just a part of the family.
You could hardly see over the accordion, but he picked it up and played by ear.
Never made any money, but we sure had a lot of fun sometimes.
We would always sing this little song that was a German prayer song. It's got three verses in there, and you still know them all.
We'd never heard a mouth organ before. Oh, man, was that beautiful.
That's all I know about music, but I've been singing in church choir ever since.
This program was produced by Prairie Public. All the recordings are from the Dakota Memories Oral History Project, which is part of the Germans from Russia collection at the North Dakota State University Libraries. You have been listening to We Always Had to Sing, German-Russian Music in the Old Days. I'm Robert Erberle. Gott sei mit uns, bis auf Wiedersehen. God be with us till we meet again.
Once again, that was We Always Had to Sing, German-Russian Music in the Old Days, and as we've been telling you, it was just put together by Prairie Public Director of Radio Bill Thomas, and we'll be letting you know about when the CD will be available, and we'll be taking those orders at that time. But this is brand new for us, and we hope you enjoyed it, and we'll let you know when you can get your own recording. Well, we're going to go from immigrants who started coming to North Dakota more than a century ago to brand new Americans in just a moment.
Do you have a guest idea, a comment, or a question? It's easy to contact us. just email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or send us a message via the Main Street at Prairie Public Facebook page. And you can still call. The Main Street toll-free studio line is 888-755-6377.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Well, this is the first in Prairie Public series called New American Stories, produced by Erica Lawrenson. Every immigrant has a story, and in this case, we're going to go to Cardinal Glass in Fargo, which employs immigrants, and each one of them has a story. Although painful, Hassan Abdi remembers his past all too well.
My name's Hassan Abdi. I'm from Somalia.
When the Somali War began in 1990, it was a civil war. Abdi's father was killed as the family made their way to Kenya.
They took him gun and put him on here, then they shot him from the head.
They left him where he lay. Another brother of Abdi's died on the way to Kenya as well, from starvation.
There's no water, there's no food to eat, there's not. You have to walk from like 100 kilometers, you know. So it's like 100 miles. It's from here to Minneapolis, if I say from Fargo to Minneapolis. Imagine how long days and months it's going to take.
In Kenya, Abdi says they faced many challenges. The UN provided a small amount of assistance, and they were living there for 15 years. As he makes a new life in the U.S., he looks towards the future, but his memories remain.
Imagine that situation, like walking, you know, because I have shoes right now, but if I show some of my bodies over there when I was working, you know, from in the region, you're going to see all of my legs start burning because of the top part of the covering even went out because of there's no shoes to wear because it shouldn't turn out. We got to stay in the middle for the night, sleep some hours, then go, sleep and not, some go. So that's one of the things that make me always remember, and I almost cry when I remember them.
Abdi has worked at Cardinal Glass in Fargo for 6 years. It was sometimes long hours to support his family. He wants to go to school, but says he has a hard time affording it. At Cardinal Glass, he believes there's equal opportunity.
I don't feel discrimination. It's equal, with equal opportunity, with equal pay. So there's diversity here. You're going to see people from immigrants from Uganda, Tanzania, Sudan, Saudi Arabia, all of the Kurdish, the Bosnian, the European over here. So this equal diversity. People have equal chance with equal pay.
Cardinal Glass plant manager Mike Arnston has 185 employees in his Fargo plant, 56% of which are immigrants. He says they use referrals for getting new employees, which might explain why there are so many from other countries.
They do bring a different story, and they add to the culture of the plant, I'd say. And I think there's a synergy with that. And so I'd say that that this culture that we have in our plant does add to our productivity and the quality of our product.
Somalia, South Sudan, Kurdish Iraq, and Bosnia are the biggest immigrant groups at Cardinal Glass, though there are 17 different countries represented. Each worker has a powerful story. Hassan had the courage to talk about his. Many others don't. This is Erica Lawrenson for Prairie Public.
In our next report, new Americans date in their respective cultures and how that differs from American dating. This series was made possible by the support of the Humanities Council and the FM Area Foundation. You can hear it on Prairie Public during Morning Edition and Main Street.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
It was a sad moment when I saw my car leave. I'm just thankful for public radio. I'm thankful for the vehicle donation program. Some of my favorite programs are Car Talk, Prairie Home Companion, and my Toyota Avalon has now become a part of public radio. My name is Ed Braswell, and I donated my 2000 Toyota Avalon to public radio.
Find out how you can donate your unwanted vehicle at prairiepublic.org or call 1-800-359-6900.
This is Main Street on Pray Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. The University of North Dakota's Writers Conference got underway today, finally got the snow cleared away, and maybe people are inside where it's a little warmer. It runs through the 23rd. I'm going to be up there tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it because this thing's been going on for 44 years, and they've got some great writers every year, and this year they're really bringing in one big name that we're going to hear about now. A preview of the Writers Conference from UND English Department undergrad Monica Hansen, as she tells us about visiting writer Tony Kushner.
This year, the UND Writers Conference is excited to host a conversation with award-winning playwright Tony Kushner. When accepting his third Oscar for Best Actor at the 2013 Academy Awards, Daniel Day-Lewis took a moment to thank Lincoln's team of co-conspirators. At the apex of that human pyramid, there are three men to whom I owe this and a great deal more: Tony Kushner, our beloved skipper Steven Spielberg, and the mysteriously beautiful mind, body, and spirit of Abraham Lincoln. Although a two-time Oscar nominee himself for Lincoln in Munich, Tony Kushner is perhaps best known for his play Angels in America, a gay fantasia on national themes, which earned him two Tony Awards and the Pulitzer Prize in 1995. Newsweek called it the most ambitious American play of our time, an epic that ranges from earth to heaven. Set in New York in the mid-1980s, among many other things, the play engages questions of identity, theology, and humanity in the middle of the AIDS epidemic of the late 20th century. In a prophetic ending, Kushner's character pronounces, "The dead will be commemorated and will struggle on with the living, and we are not going away. We won't die secret deaths anymore. The world spins forward. We will be citizens. The time has come. The great work begins." The impact of this work and his numerous others is profound. As the New York Times explains, some playwrights want to change the world. Some want to revolutionize theater. Tony Kushner is that rarity of rarities, a writer who has the promise to do both. Kushner's work has been produced at the Mark Taper Forum, the New York Shakespeare Festival, New York Theater Workshop, Hartford Stage Company, Berkeley Repertory Theater, and the Los Angeles Theater Center, as well as theaters in over 30 countries across the globe. A conversation with Tony Kushner will take place in the Chester Fritz Auditorium on Friday, March 22nd at 8 p.m. and will be moderated by Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein from Y Radio.
And we should tell you that Jack Russell Weinstein's Why Philosophical Discussion About Everyday Life will be rebroadcast on Prairie Public June 12th, so get that on your calendar now. But if you want to see him live, again, it's Friday at 8 o'clock at Chester Fritz Auditorium on the campus of UND. Decoded 8 Book is next.
Support for this program is provided by the North Dakota Education Association, an organization of 8,000 school employees working to ensure great public schools for every child.
Prairie Public is launching a new multimedia project about bullying among kids in North Dakota. But the project needs a name. If you've got an idea, send it to info@prairiepublic.org by email. Whoever comes up with the winner will receive a $25 gift certificate. And don't forget to listen for programming from, well, it could be Project Bully, but that's already taken. Could be the Anti-Bully Project. Now, that one's already taken.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 19th. Ruth Myers, North Dakota's 33rd Lieutenant Governor, passed away in office on this date in 1987. The state's first female lieutenant governor, Myers was diagnosed with lung and brain cancer in September of 1986. Despite the diagnosis, she continued to serve in office until her death 6 months later. Myers was born into a politically active family in November of 1925. Her father served in the North Dakota State Senate for 20 years. After a career working in social services as a caseworker and welfare director, Myers was elected as a state representative in 1974. In 1984, she was drafted by the Democratic Women's Caucus to be George Sinner's running mate for the post of lieutenant governor. Sinner later said that Myers didn't even seek the job, but that the job sought her. She and Sinner won the 1984 November election with over 55% of the popular vote. Once in office, her down-to-earth charm and easy manner easily won over opponents. When she became temporary acting governor while Sinner left the state, she was asked whether she should be addressed as governor, acting governor, or lieutenant governor. She replied, "You can call me Ruth." While serving in Bismarck, Myers commuted home each weekend. For her, home was the farm and the ranch she and her husband shared near Ross, North Dakota. It was where the couple raised five sons, including a foster child from Paraguay. On September 9, 1986, Myers collapsed at her desk at the Capitol. She was rushed to the hospital, where doctors discovered malignant tumors in both her lung and brain. A lifelong smoker, doctors attributed the aggressive cancer to cigarette smoking. The following month, Myers appeared on the CBS Morning News to discuss the dangers of smoking, especially in women. She continued her work in Bismarck, working around her schedule of radiation therapy as she battled with her illness. In December, she even oversaw a special session of the state legislature, where House Speaker Richard Klobeck shared the sentiments of many North Dakota lawmakers when he said that her courage was something for all of us to strive for. Only 3 months later, Myers succumbed to her illness at the age of 61. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jamie Job. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Listen to our podcast or a previous broadcast anytime, anywhere. In your home or on your phone, you can catch Main Street on any street. All day, all night, a friend in Fiji or your aunt in Vermont can tune into a show you just know they'd want to hear, or they can browse older shows for other topics of interest. Our app and archives are easy to find. They're right on Main Street, in the radio neighborhood at prairiepublic.org.
Oom-pa-pa. Okay, a little oom-pa-pa music to say adios, mixing my cultures from Main Street today. But before Ashley and I say adieu, I would just remind you that the UND Writers Conference is underway. Richard Bausch starts reading at 4 o'clock, so just minutes away in the Memorial Union at UND. And then tonight at 8, Dorothy Allison speaks at the Union. I'm going to be up there in the morning to catch the public readings, and I also want to be there for the panel Remembrance of Things Past with Richard Bausch, Dorothy Allison, and Mary Jo Bang, and looking forward to being actually on site for my very first UND Writers Conference. Ashley, what you got on?
It is coming up on Poison Prevention Week, and I'll be talking with a Sanford employee about some of the best ways to keep kids and beyond safe from some of the poisons that are in your home and can even sometimes be a surprise. Didn't necessarily know they might be poisonous. So.
Are you dug out now?
I am. I got stuck in my own driveway once, but we're dug out of this weather. Hopefully no more of this.
Well, I haven't had a newspaper in 2 days, but the sidewalk's clear now, so maybe I'll get one tomorrow. We'll see about that.
It should be good roads for going up to Grand Forks tomorrow.
I certainly hope so.
It's amazing, so I'm a little jealous you get to go.
Okay, well, I'll bring back some good stuff, I hope. In the meantime, I hope you are fine and your snow is where it ought to be and you're warm. And in the meantime, you have a great evening.